Welcome to KDNK's Weekly Newsreel,
a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. The weekly newsreel is underwritten by RJ Paddywax Pet Outfitters, next to City Market in Elgebel, open 7 days a week. More info at 970-963-1700 or rjpaddywax.com.
I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. Well, you probably don't need me to tell you that it's been one crazy COVID week. From protests against stay-at-home orders, some armed, some not, to an idea floated by POTUS to inject disinfectants as a way to combat the virus. And stay-at-home orders across the nation are shifting, including in Colorado. But first, the numbers. As of April 23rd, statewide, 12,256 Coloradans had tested positive for COVID-19, but state epidemiologist Dr. Rachel Herlihy explains the number of infected is likely much higher.
We believe that number is actually probably closer to 65,000 or 75,000, and that is really based on the modeling work that we are doing, as well as our understanding of rates of asymptomatic transmission, as well as symptomatic transmission.
674 Coloradans have died of COVID-19 as of April 23rd. 2,366 people are in the hospital, and 56,789 Coloradans have been tested. A total of 526 cases had been confirmed in Eagle County, 1 in Rio Blanco County, 84 in Garfield County, 59 in Pitkin, and 37 in Mesa County. Data from Garfield County's self-reporting surveys show that 38% of respondents are experiencing mental health challenges. 29% are struggling with economic hardship. About 18% face physical health challenges, and close to 15% are dealing with food insecurity. Respondents miss hanging out with friends and family the most. Governor Jared Polis announced this week that Eagle County will be the first in the state to reopen. According to the Eagle County website, new cases of COVID-19 peaked around March 21st. On April 20th, the amount of new cases had dropped from 111 to 14. Eagle County will begin to loosen stay-at-home orders on Monday, April 27th. More information and details are at ecemergency.org. The governor also ordered all workers in critical buildings, such as grocery stores and nursing homes across the state, to wear face masks.
His executive order comes after there have been coronavirus outbreaks in at least 15 nursing homes and residential care facilities around the state.
We know that you all want your parents, your grandparents, to have the very best protection if they live in Colorado, and we want to do our best as a state to provide that.
Polis is also sending the Colorado National Guard to help with virus testing at the largest nursing homes in the state. And he says he's stepping up enforcement of rules at these sites. About half of all deaths from COVID-19 in the state have been in nursing and long-term care facilities.
Garfield County is planning on reopening on May 4th, but businesses will need to have a plan in place.
Under the Garfield County Safer at Home Plan update released Wednesday, retail and personal services in the county will not be allowed to reopen until Monday, May 4th. This includes, with strict precautions, elective procedures including dental work, in-person real estate showings, and personal services like salons, personal trainers, and tattoo shops. By May 4th, large workplaces can bring back 50% of their workforce with temperature and symptom checks as employees enter. Restaurants, bars, and clubs will still be closed until at least mid-May, as well as any gatherings over 10 people. Governor Polis says they could stay closed longer, depending on what real-time modeling data shows. The county is also requiring businesses to submit a social distancing plan via an online form prior to reopening. So far, some of the state guidelines for reopening include physical distancing of 6 feet or greater, wearing masks, and limiting the number of people in enclosed spaces, among other actions.
You can find details about the Garfield County Phase 1 implementation plan at kdnk.org or at the Garfield County website. Starting this week, new categories of workers can file for unemployment with the state, thanks to provisions in the CARES Act.
Before the COVID-19 pandemic, you probably heard that unemployment in the U.S. had fallen to historic lows. What you may not have heard was that many of the new jobs created since the end of the Great Recession were gig workers, independent contractors, and people who were self-employed. These workers don't normally qualify for many of the benefits of W-2 or salaried employees, things like health insurance, paid leave, or overtime. But for now, they're getting at least one thing they didn't have before: unemployment insurance. Chief Economist Chris Stifler from the Colorado Fiscal Institute explains.
People like Uber drivers and what they call the gig economy and self-employed individuals don't normally qualify for unemployment insurance. But now, as part of the stimulus package and the federal changes, they're going to qualify for that. So really read up on how you can qualify for unemployment insurance.
Under the new CARES Act from the federal government, many types of workers who were not previously eligible can receive a $600 per week pandemic unemployment assistance check. This includes independent contractors or people who receive 1099s and small business owners who file IRS 1040 documents or any combination thereof. Given the record number of workers now filing for unemployment, Colorado's Department of Labor and Employment established a brand new online system for handling claims and even set up a new 80-person remote call center that came online today. They also held virtual town halls in English and Spanish this morning to answer specific questions.
Sometime this morning, this afternoon, coloradoui.gov, soon you'll see a redesigned homepage. There will be four buttons. And there is some content that says who should file which type of claim. The first one is file a regular claim. The second button will say file a pandemic unemployment assistance claim. Click on that button and it will take you into the application.
Many self-employed workers have already filed unemployment claims, but have been rejected or were still waiting on a response. CDLE officials instructed anyone in this situation to reapply now that the pandemic unemployment assistance benefits are available.
The guidance we're giving is, yeah, you would want to reapply on the pandemic unemployment assistance website when that comes up later today, because if your regular UI claim has no wages, then we're not going to be able to pay you on that system, on that program, and you're going to most likely have to go to the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program and reapply there.
Workers who have already qualified for standard unemployment insurance from the state do not need to take additional action to receive the federal $600 per week payment. It will be applied automatically and retroactively back to March 29th. Self-employed individuals and gig workers who plan to apply for unemployment should be prepared with the appropriate documentation.
So what we're asking you to do is bring your most recent tax documents. Hopefully you've got your 2019 tax documents. If you don't have your 2019 tax documents, we will accept 2018 tax documents, but we need official tax documents that will demonstrate your earnings and all of the relevant information we need to establish the benefit level that you are eligible for.
Since many who are self-employed are also business owners, some have expressed confusion over whether they can receive money under the federal Paycheck Protection Program while also receiving unemployment benefits. State officials say, no, you can't qualify for both, so it's either one or the other.
Should I just apply for the unemployment first, or would you recommend that I just wait a few more weeks to see if the small business PPP loan comes in or doesn't? And then apply for benefits retroactively?
Yeah, that's going to be a decision you're going to need to make depending upon your economic situation and if you've got the capacity to wait a few weeks and see if PPP might be the best avenue for you. If you don't have that luxury, then by all means, you can apply for benefits now through unemployment.
Officials from Colorado's Department of Labor and Employment say the new system has been tested to handle thousands of claims per hour, but expected high volumes mean it could still load slowly at certain times, especially in the next few days.
So if it asks you to come back in about 30 minutes or try back later, please have some patience with that. Furthermore, when you're in the application, the same holds true. If pages don't load as quickly as you might be typically accustomed to, please have some patience with it. Allow it to process. Try not to hit refresh too many times. That'll create more problems with processing your claim.
Today's town halls also featured information on getting a new PIN number, resetting passwords, and more on self-employed and gig workers. You can file an unemployment claim, view recordings of the town halls, and check your claim status at coloradoui.gov. Officials say online is the best way to file, but if you have to call, the number is 1-800-388-5515. So again, that's coloradoui.gov or call 1-800-388-5515.
And small businesses in Aspen can now apply for rent relief of up to $14,000.
To qualify for the program, businesses must meet a list of requirements. For example, they must be currently closed by the Pitkin County Public Health Order or forced to dramatically limit operations and be unable to operate remotely. They must have fewer than 35 employees, possess a current business license with and have a physical location in the city of Aspen. Eligible businesses must also have a rent payment for the period of April 1st through June 1st of this year due to a landlord with whom the business has no ownership interest. They must be current in all payments to the city of Aspen, such as sales and lodging taxes, water utility payments, and others. Businesses eligible for rent relief must have been in business for the 2019-2020 winter season and be open for at least 32 weeks out of the year. Businesses offering takeaway food or that deliver goods or products are eligible. Startup businesses will be considered on a case-by-case basis. Aspen City Council has allocated up to $1 million for this program as part of a larger stimulus package approved this month. Businesses will need to complete an application and provide required documentation in order to be considered for relief. More information about the program is at cityofaspen.com/COVID business. I'm Lucas Turner, KDNK News.
You're listening to the weekly news reel featuring top stories aired between Monday and Friday. In-kind support comes from Grassroots Community Network, promoting civic participation through civil discourse, creative endeavors, and cultural interaction. Grassroots TV also partners with KDNK to air live Pitkin County public health and community meetings. More info at grassrootstv.org.
About 75 people make up the year-round local homeless population in the Roaring Fork and Colorado River Valleys. I spoke with community organizer Debbie Wild to find out what's available to help those without shelter to shelter in place. How has the COVID-19 pandemic impacted the homeless population in the Roaring Fork Valley?
It's impacted them in ways that it's impacted all of us as human beings, right? We're talking about people who don't have a roof over their heads, don't necessarily have a place to shelter in the same way that many do, and don't have running water for cleanliness. So one of the big impacts is that there is certainly in that population is a nervousness and a concern that all of us have had with this, and more so there because people are in a much more vulnerable position. There is not the access to potentially at times getting a shower and getting cleaned up and some of the things that were just available in the community just kind of naturally. The access to Wi-Fi, the use of libraries, being able to stop at McDonald's for a cup of coffee, you know, things like that where people are missing those pieces. All of us are, and the homeless are as well, and maybe most particularly. There is also a little bit of a difference right now because there's no public transportation coming into our valley. And at this season of the year, we would see a much bigger spike in the homeless population just with the transient or kind of seasonal homeless. And that hasn't really shown up in the same way as it usually does. We have a resident population of homelessness, our local homeless population, and those folks are here.
What resources has this population had over the past 2 months?
The shelters that were in place for the winter, which are in Glenwood Springs and Aspen, the Glenwood Springs shelter closed at its usual time, and Aspen shelter has continued a little bit longer. The homeless really accessed food kind of through those shelters in Glenwood Springs and in Rifle, for example, the extended table. That's still happening, those meals, but they're a grab-and-go kind of meal as opposed to a sit-down-and-eat meal. And the day shelter pieces are still available through Feed My Sheep and at Aspen Homeless Shelter, but they're doing things in a manner that there's only 10 people at a time. And what I can tell you about everyone who has a touch point with the homeless on the front lines is they're doing a really strict job of everything they can as far as public health guidelines and teaching and giving information to homeless individuals about the same.
Have there been any illnesses for essential workers at Feed My Sheep, Salvation Army?
No, at least as of last week, even among the homeless population, kind of the same response. I mean, people are staying pretty healthy, trying to be really strict about things. We just did a really collaborative effort of to get hand sanitizer distributed. We're using the Marble Distillery, and like the Glenwood Rotary Club has been a part of that whole project, trying to get bottles of hand sanitizer out, because again, the inability to be washing your hands, like, is the first thing on the list for all of us, right? Is that constant hand washing. So that's been one of the things that we're trying to make happen, that and the masks.
What do the people on the front lines working with the homeless population, what do they need from the community?
You know, the food piece has been okay. Communities have been fabulous. Money donations are always helpful, because the infrastructure to manage this is what's going to be a little bit at risk, I think, as we go into the future. And that is, so some of these do fundraisers to keep their shops open, right, and their work happening, all the way from Lift Up to all these others that I mentioned. And those things are, like, not happening, at least in these next coming months. So I think that's one of the places that right now that I hear from them the most could be monetary donations.
Anything else you'd like to add, Debbie Wild?
You know, this is a crisis on top of a crisis, because the homeless piece is a crisis that's been going on for some decades, and now we have something on top of it. The hope would be that when we are dealing with this risk, you know, that the most vulnerable among us are bearing the greatest burden, and that when we fight for the most marginalized, that protects our society as a whole. And in this case, when we do good stuff to keep the homeless population healthy, being able to shelter, not moving around, it really protects all of us. And I think it's time for us to take that sort of look at things and use this opportunity to come out of this with a different idea about how our community looks at homelessness.
Debbie Wild, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Most national parks around the Mountain West remain closed to slow the spread of coronavirus, and it remains unclear if or when parks will reopen. When the time comes, Yellowstone National Park Superintendent Cam Shawley said parks will likely open in phases. Shawley added that parks have had to delay hiring seasonal employees. A new study in the journal Science says that human-driven climate change is pushing the American West into a mega drought and into its driest period in more than 400 years.
The research found that, yes, we are in a cyclical pattern of dryness in the West, but it also found human-driven climate change has made it much worse. Andrew Badger is a hydrological scientist who works with several space and science organizations, and he helped do modeling for the study.
When you have these changes that are induced by humans, it took what would have been a regular drought within the normal range of variability to an extreme mega drought.
He says a mega drought is a drought that lasts for decades. In addition to modeling, researchers looked at thousands of tree rings to calculate past moisture levels. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Madeline Beck.
On a lighter or darker note, Colorado Parks and Wildlife is encouraging citizen scientists to observe the night skies during International Dark Sky Week. KDNK's Kathleen Shannon spoke with CPW citizen science technician Audrey Spencer.
So can you talk to me a little bit about citizen science, kind of what's involved and why is it important?
Citizen science is collaboration between scientific experts and non-scientists who are curious about the world around them. I like to think of it as crowdsourcing scientific data. I saw this quote recently, science needs more eyes, ears, and perspectives than any scientist possesses. And citizen science really allows us to collect much more data than any single person could hope to collect on their own. So we have several different citizen science programs running in all 41 state parks throughout the year.
So it is International Dark Sky Week right now. Can you tell me a little bit about the history of the Dark Sky Week and what sort of information is collected during this time?
So International Dark Sky Week is an annual event created by the International Dark Sky Association. This year, it's April 19th to 26th, so that is this week. Mm-hmm. And we support the IDA's mission through our Dark Sky Monitoring Citizen Science Program, which encourages volunteers to help collect information about the quality of the night sky and the nocturnal environment within our state parks, focusing on information about light pollution or sky glow. And that information will help us identify parks that could be in the process for an International Dark Sky Park certification.
Would that allow certain protective measurements to go into place?
It's more of a recognition of the park's efforts to protect the dark sky quality and the quality of the nocturnal environment. And that's really important because light pollution has a lot of different impacts on the nocturnal environment, not just our ability to see night skies or celestial objects, but at high enough intensities that artificial light at night can impact the natural circadian rhythm of animals, including humans, impacting sleep patterns. It influences predator-prey interactions, impacts navigation of nocturnally migrating birds. It also has a significant energy cost. If the outdoor lighting is being lost to the environment, to the sky around it, then it's not lighting what it should be lighting, and it's wasted electricity. So the certification really identifies parks and areas that have prioritized maintaining high quality night skies and nocturnal environments for those important reasons.
Is information collected from all over or pretty much just the state parks?
For the CPW Dark Sky Monitoring Project, we really look for data that's collected from the state parks. Right now, we're looking to get a baseline understanding of the night sky quality in state parks. Under normal circumstances, we would be asking volunteers to take measurements in any state park that allows nighttime access. However, because campgrounds and camping facilities are closed at the moment and all state parks, many parks have restricted hours and are not currently open at night. So that consideration, in addition to the governor's ongoing statewide stay-at-home order, means that we're asking that dark sky monitoring activities within state parks be postponed for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. Instead, we're encouraging people to use the apps to collect observations, get accustomed to the database, take observations from their community or from their backyard. And then once things get back to normal and the state parks open back up at night, then we would love to get more volunteers out in state parks specifically to gather data about the night sky quality there.
That was KDNK's Kathleen Shannon and Colorado Parks and Wildlife Citizen Science Tech, Audrey Spencer. And finally, the COVID pandemic and all of the changes it's wrought on people around the world has brought with it strong emotions such as panic, anger, sadness, and feelings of powerlessness. I spoke with Jackie Skramstad, Clinical Operations Manager for MindSprings Health, this week about the mental health impacts of the pandemic. Here's a clip from that conversation.
We have to start to let go of and have a sense of acceptance around the idea that there is no normal, or maybe the normal is going to keep shifting. I don't know how we want to define normal or even if we want to try. I think people keep holding on to this notion that we're going to get back to normal. Mm-hmm. And whatever normal is going to look like, for one, it's going to be evolving over the next year around how we are balancing physical distancing and being out and about and having a vibrant community and how we balance all those needs. That's going to be evolving. I also think at the end of this pandemic, whenever that's going to be, I don't think we're going to be going back to the normal that we once knew. And I think we have to find a way to sort of embrace that and allow a new normal to evolve.
What makes you say that once this pandemic sort of ends, we won't be returning to the normal we once knew? What makes you say that?
There are things that have already changed as a result of this pandemic that have nothing to do with the pandemic itself, that I think are going to impact our society. And so I'll use the mental health world, since that's the world I'm very involved with. We have been doing televideo therapy. That has been something that has been taking off in recent years, gaining popularity. Now that we've had to do it for every appointment, I think there are going to be clients who say, gosh, this worked so much better for me. I live way outside of town, and for me to just be able to see my therapist on Zoom and not have to drive, or I have childcare issues, or there's going to be some people who don't want to go back to face-to-face therapy. There are going to be some therapists who really resisted technology as a tool for therapy, who are going to now be thinking, goodness, how do we use this in new and different ways to engage people in therapy? And so I'll give you an example. This isn't one we've necessarily been doing during the pandemic, but I think as we really look at these platforms, one application may be, how do we get a working parent more involved in some of the family therapy sessions? For example, construction is a really big industry in our valley. So for a working parent in the construction industry, you don't leave the construction site to drive to your kid's family therapy appointment. That takes, what, half an hour to an hour to drive. You spend an hour in the session, then you go back. So now you've looked at anywhere from 2 to 3 hours off the job site. That just doesn't work in the construction industry. But if you could go sit in your car and Zoom in to your kid's family therapy session during your 45-minute lunch break, now that is reasonable and doable. So I think there are ways that we are going to be looking at, gosh, what did we learn? How do we use this? Because there were some real benefits to that. I wonder if in cities, if a lot of this televideo platform is going to continue to be used in some of our businesses. I mean, the smog levels, the pollution levels in cities, you can see the hills in LA right now, which you often can't. I mean, it's rare that you can see them. So I think when people look and go, wow, like, you know, this really had major impacts on pollution, on the health and well-being of those of us in cities like Denver and L.A. And I think the question is going to be asked, do we really want to go back to the way it was, or do we want to use some of these lessons to move forward?
That was a clip from a Valley Voices interview with Jackie Skramstad, Clinical Operations Manager for MindSprings Health. You can find the entire conversation at kdnk.org. That does it for this week's newsreel, KDNK's weekly news magazine, highlighting stories aired between Monday and Friday. You can find all of these stories and more at our website, kdnk.org. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. Thanks for listening.